He found his voice as a political leader on December 5, 1955, when he was just 26 and a newly installed pastor in Montgomery, Alabama. At Hole Street Baptist Church that evening, 4 days after the arrest of Rosa Parks for refusing to give up her seat on a bus to a white passenger, he addressed a crowd of black Alabamans. They were concerned about the response that their boycott of Montgomery's buses might provoke from the city's whites. Mr. Eig explains that King needed to embolden without embittering. He had to acknowledge his audience's justified anger, yet persuade them to protest righteously and hopefully. Speaking without notes, he advanced a reassuring argument deeply rooted in American and Christian traditions. "We are not wrong," he declared. "If we are wrong, the Supreme Court of this nation is wrong. If we are wrong, the Constitution of the United States is wrong. If we are wrong, God Almighty is wrong." They were not wrong, and that may have been the mid-century civil rights movement's greatest strength. King's efforts to overturn legal segregation were at once radical because African Americans had been second-class citizens since America's founding, and based on straightforward American ideals. He understood that the country's promises of freedom and equality were hollow if geography or skin color could invalidate them. Moral suasion was not enough. King also led the most successful pressure campaign in American history, enduring beatings, bombings, imprisonment, scorn, the arm's-length caution of John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson's two-faced truculence, and illegal monitoring and harassment by the FBI. Within a decade of his address in Holt Street, Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. He signed the Fair Housing Act, outlawing discrimination in housing, a week after an assassin's bullet ended King's life in 1968. Yet by the time King died, many considered him yesterday's man. His opposition to the war in Vietnam alienated some of his compatriots. The civil rights movement had splintered as more radical voices, such as Stokely Carmichael's, grew louder. Many white Americans saw ending segregation as the movement's goal, when, for King, it was just the start. His aim was brotherhood and equality. As the 55 years since his death have shown, achieving those through policy is fiendishly difficult. A difficult goal can be worth striving for, however, and it does King and his quest an injustice to suggest he called only for color blindness, and not, as he put it in 1967, a reconstruction of the entire society, perhaps involving the nationalization of industry and a guaranteed basic income. Such ideas may be discomforting, including for those who would enlist King as an opponent of CRT, always skeptical of the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. He came to believe that most Americans are unconscious racists. But those were still his views, even if expressing them could spell trouble for a teacher in Florida.